Hey, and welcome into the Big Ten Huddle. I'm your host, JR. I've got a lot to talk about going on in the Big Ten. Got my co-host, Zach Guggenheim, here with me tonight. Zach, I've been studying the rules of podcasting, and I've been trying to find the loopholes, and people have ha they've been telling me that I've been doing things that are against the rules, but I don't think they're against the rules. Is it okay if I slightly break a rule if it's good for the podcast, Zach? Is that okay if I do that?
I think as long as you take the antidote of confidence beforehand, I think it's fine.
I take the antidote of confidence every morning, Zach. Every morning.
So Sprite is part of the breakfast regimen then?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
A little
Then I think
Sprite in
it's
your
fine.
coffee every morning gives it a little bit of carbonation.
That I'm not sure how I want to. I don't know if I want to test that theory. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, no, you don't. You don't. So, if you don't know what we're talking about the Dan Lanning situation with him, basically just affirming that he did in fact mean to have 12 men on the field at the end of that game, which I contend is a smart move. I know there's some people today that are like, oh, he cheated and yada yada. It's like, no, this is stuff that Bill Belichick has done. This is stuff that all different kinds of great coaches have done. And if you ask me, like, it's a good move. If there's a loophole in the rules, you exploit it. They probably are going to change it, but for that one game, you exploit it and move on from there.
For once, it'd be nice if Ryan Day, instead of complaining about the loophole, although he didn't complain about this one, but instead of like being the victim of them, maybe find them.
Yeah. Well, that's what Dan Lanning said. He said that like they have somebody that's like on staff that literally they pay them to just go through the rule book and like find loopholes. It's like,
Which
well,
is a little it's a little unethical. I will say that, but
but hey, if it helps you win.
well, there's a guy, his name rhymes with Bonner Ballions that might agree with that.
Zach, we have refrained from talking about him on this show for the rest of eternity. I don't
I
know who
didn't
you're
say his
talking about.
name. I didn't say his name. I just said it rhymes with Donner Dalliance.
Philip says even if he didn't intend to have 12 men on the field, there's no way he admits it. I guess that's true. Like, if everybody's calling you like this evil genius, like it's like Dwight in The Office when Michael was like, hey, you're gonna take the fall for us giving away the Willy Wonka deal to our largest competitor, and then the largest competitor says, we're using you forever, and he's like, oh, well, there's no way I'm not taking credit for this now. If you've never watched The Office, you're probably
Yes.
confused right now, but
Am I the assistant regional, or am I the assistant host, or am I the assistant to the host
you are
of the
the assistant
podcast?
podcast to the host.
Yes.
Perfect. Oh man. All right. Well, we got games to get to. We have seven critical games to get to in the Big Ten. I wouldn't say all of them are like critical to the Big Ten race, but I think every single one of these games has an aspect to it, to a team trying to like keep their season alive, maybe find an identity, or trying to prove something to the rest of the conference and the rest of college football. Even if they're not being talked about nationally, we're still going to talk about them here and give them some of the time that I believe they do deserve to have. Let's see. Brenton said he did admit to it. I mean, it was implied, and that smirk definitely makes it seem so. But yeah, he didn't like come outright and say like, "Oh yeah, we plan on doing that." But yeah, I didn't catch that right after the game. I didn't hear him say anything like that.
I think Phillips' point is that he may have claimed that it was his intention to mask the fact that maybe it was unintentional because it was an idiotic play, but that ended up working. So I think that's what Philip was trying to hint at, which I don't know if I agree with, but he's got a point that if it was a mistake, it's a good way to cover for a mistake and be like, oh yeah, I was totally my intention.
Totally meant to do this.
Yeah, just like it was totally JR's intention to put that Sprite in the coffee this morning.
Yeah, totally. All right, good stuff. Let's actually start talking about some games. How about that, Zach? We ready to do
That
that?
sounds great.
Okay. All right. We got UCLA and Rutgers in this one. UCLA and Rutgers are kicking off on, what is it, Saturday at noon, and Rutgers is favored by 4.5 in this one. Unfortunately for Rutgers, they have a lot of injuries coming into this. We were talking about it. There's no, like, super, I guess I shouldn't say there's nobody that's not confirmed. I don't have like the full list of confirmed in front of me, but I know there are a couple offensive linemen at least that will not be playing in this game. And there's some other guys that are questionable as well. So Rutgers, a pretty beat up football team, and they've had a rough couple of past weeks. Athan-Kelly Manis and the boys on offense had a hard time against Nebraska, and then this last week they get blown out by Wisconsin. It's just been not a great time for Rutgers right now. Zach, do you think Rutgers gets back on track on this game, or do you feel like UCLA gets their first Big Ten win on the road in Piscataway?
So I was looking at over at the rivals board for Rutgers earlier tonight, and they're claiming that there's a possibility that 5 NFL level defenders are out for this game. Now Teray is one of them. He's been out.
Yeah.
But they're also saying Powell and Longerbeam and a couple other guys might be out.
Did they say did Powell re-aggravate his injury?
They didn't say anything. They just said five defense lost 5 NFL draft picks. And as I've looked at other threads, it seems like there's at least some confirmation for some of them.
Gotcha.
Not necessarily all of them. So there's some, I'm saying there's smoke. I'm not saying that it's confirmed, but there's smoke that there are significant injuries to some of their best players. And I like Shiano. You know, we were talking about, they're an 8-10 win team this year, healthy.
Yep.
I think that Wisconsin game it's a gut check for them. And I think it exposed some things that I didn't think were still part of this program, which is, I don't want to say they gave up, but I think the depth, which we thought was maybe a little stronger. One, it's still Rutgers level depth from probably the past few years. So while their higher level starters, I think, have elevated, I still think the depth, it's going to take some time to catch up to. I also just don't know, how do you respond to a drubbing when preseason you're like, this is a game that we expect to win. It wasn't a game that they hoped to win. It was a game they expected to win. You look at last year when they played at Camp Randall, with Gavin Wimsatt, mind you, not Athan-Kelly Manis, and they're a pick six. You know, that pick six changed the game. Otherwise, I think Rutgers wins that game on the road. And instead, this year, when they're more optimistic about this team, they get just completely blown out. Their offense has gone away. I mean, we haven't seen any decent offensive production in any relevant part of a game for the past couple weeks. And I think UCLA, while they have not been great, they have a couple things to really build upon against Minnesota, against even against Penn State a little bit. I'm a little nervous to pick this game because UCLA, A, is, I think, not well coached, and B, is traveling. But I kind of like the momentum of the Bruins more than I like where the Rutgers Scarlet Knights are right now.
Yeah, I think that, you know, definitely with all the injuries, UCLA has a good argument here for being the more talented team, which if you would have told me that UCLA would come in, you know, arguing they're the more talented team against Rutgers early on in the season, I would have told you you're crazy. But with, you know, the talent that is out of this game and UCLA showing that they do have talent on their team and they're just not very well coached, that at the end of the day, it is, you know, it's hard to argue that UCLA doesn't stand a chance in this one. I like Kent's analysis here. He says, should be a good game. Rutgers playing a lot of backups this weekend, and UCLA, they've basically been playing backups all year. So, you know, there we go.
That's well done, Kent. Well done.
But at the end of the day, like, I'm with you. Like, the travel and the fact that I just think Greg Schiano is that much better of a coach than Deshaun Foster, even with all that talent out, I still feel like it's really difficult to pick against Rutgers, because if Kyle Manungai does get going, and I know he needs his offensive line to do that, but if he does get going, you have more talented players in Kyle Manungai, and I do think Rutgers has some talent on the outside, Dymier Miller being one of them, and Chris Long is the other one. Like, I think that they have talent on the outside, and as much as Athan Kaliakmanis has struggled, he has shown sparks at times, and so if you get a running game, Athan Kaliakmanis is going to be more comfortable back there. So to me, that's what this game comes down to, is can Rutgers finally get their running game going? Can Kyle Manungai be that guy, even with multiple offensive linemen not playing in this game? It's going to be rather difficult, because one of UCLA, I mean, I said it all season long, one of UCLA's strengths is stopping the run. However, this is a very good running attack from Rutgers that just they haven't shown it the past 2 weeks. And so I think for sure Greg Schiano is going to be challenging those guys and saying, if you want to win this game, you have to get a running attack going. So, Zach, with that being said, what is your pick and who you think is going to win this game?
I hate what I'm about to say.
Oh, no.
I'm picking UCLA to win.
Oh.
28-17. I think.
Wow.
I think the struggle is the way that Rutgers has been playing is they haven't been able to get any offense going.
Mm-hmm.
And UCLA, you know, Sturdivant on the outside is a dynamic player. If you don't have your corners in Longerbeam, you know, if he's not in like that, as bad as Garbers has played at times, like he still can be competent. And they have talent on the outside. And I think if UCLA gets up a couple scores, that's just a recipe for disaster. I don't care about, you know, the time zone jump. I get that. And they just beat Washington. I get that. But injuries and morale, I just feel like are just, and the way Rutgers is constructed, I just don't think this plays out well for them.
I hear you. And maybe this is me picking too much against, you know, what we've seen this season, even if it might not be there the last two games and there's, you know, possible injuries. I'm still going to pick Rutgers in this one. And I'm starting to come on to what everybody is saying, which Philip brings it up here. He's taking Rutgers, the two time zone jump, has claimed many victims. And for me, at this point, I think I might just start giving a whole lot more credit to this time zone jump than I was at the beginning of the year, because it is happening to a lot of teams right now having to travel so far. Now, I did point out many of these teams that are losing are not the favored teams, so, you know, that does impact it. But still, like, you see teams struggling going across the country that they shouldn't be struggling, right? I mean, Penn State, their offense should not have struggled in the first half as much as they did against USC. And that's not trying to disparage USC. They have a better defense this year, but it's still not that much better of a defense. So whatever the time zone jump is, it's from coast to coast. And I feel like I'm going to go with Rutgers in this one. I'm actually going to say a little bit of a lower scoring game, and I think Rutgers gets the field goals. I'm going to say 20-17. Rutgers pulls it out at home. I think they get a lift from the crowd, and I think UCLA just has too hard of a time with the time jump. And I think we're singing Greg Schiano's praises here on Sunday night, saying you had all this against you. You know, we're gonna give Greg Schiano the praise because he's the better coach.
I hope, and this is not a shot at UCLA. I really want UCLA to do well too. I really hope you're right though, because we had a lot of hype for Rutgers this season. And I feel like if they lose this game, it, like, all the hype's gone, it becomes, do they win a bowl or do they get to a bowl game at that point? And I really hope that's not where we're at on Sunday night. Like, I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like, I do kind of want Rutgers to win as well, but I'm not hating on UCLA. I'm not rooting against them. I just, I think Rutgers is the better coach team here. So, yep. All right. Let's move on to the next game. Zach, we have Iowa versus Michigan State. This one is going to be at Michigan State, and Sparty is coming off their bye week, or no, they are coming off their bye week in this one, and Iowa is favored by 6.5. Cade McNamara, not been the best quarterback in the world, but he's been good enough in the majority of their games. Caleb Johnson continues to be Ashton Jeanty light. You know, he's just going crazy against some of these teams. Last game, he even got a receiving touchdown, so he's kind of doing it all for the Iowa Hawkeyes right now. What's your vibes on this game, Zach?
I think this might be Washington round two. Like, I think Iowa turns you over. Iowa stops the run. I think Iowa can run the ball. Like, I think Michigan State might struggle to stop the run. And so all those things, I think, spell big win for Iowa, because Michigan State, they struggle with turnovers and they struggle to run the ball. So I think we'll see a couple of highlight Aiden Childs plays. But I think Iowa wins, and I think they win big. I've got 37-13.
Yeah, I think that Iowa is going to win this one. I don't see much from Michigan State that's going to be able to stop Caleb Johnson. And then I feel like Iowa is too good of a defense to not force turnovers against Michigan State here, right? I mean, if Michigan State is not turning the ball over, then they have a good chance of winning this game. I think that they've played well enough and they've moved the ball well enough to give them that credit. But like I said, I mean, this is Nebraska of last year. They can get into close games, but if they turn the ball over, they're going to get out of it. I mean, that's just the way it goes. And they turn the ball over a lot, so they're out of a lot of these games because of how much they're doing that. And so I just find it hard to believe that Michigan State Iowa's going to come to Michigan State and they're just going to come play a completely off game, and Aiden Childs is going to go crazy and not throw any interceptions, and they're not going to have any fumbles or anything like that. So I'm with you. I am picking Iowa to win this one. I think that it's going to be a little bit closer. I think that Michigan State does have an okay run defense, and so Caleb Johnson does take care of business, but I'm actually going to go 24-13 Iowa in this one. And Kirk Ferentz, he continues to roll, continues to get wins. And I think that Iowa, they're to me one of the sleeper teams in the Big Ten right now that could finish first, second, or third in the Big Ten. When you look at some of this stuff, are you with me there, Zach, that Iowa could have finished up there at the top, or are you kind of like out on them and you think they're going to be 8-4, 7-5?
I think they're going to finish 10-2.
So you think no more losses here on out?
Yeah. I think Nebraska's got the best shot at them. Like I mean, their schedule. I mean, we said it in the preseason, like their schedule is at Michigan State, Northwestern home, Wisconsin home. That's a tricky one too, with the way Wisconsin's improving. Although, well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that game later. At UCLA, at Maryland, and then Nebraska. I think Wisconsin and Nebraska are the two where I'm like, aren't automatic wins for me, but I would favor them in both of those games right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's very favorable, the road games they have. Their road games here at Michigan State, UCLA, and Maryland. You have to go out west, and this is probably the easiest team to go out west against. Multiple teams have won out there on the West Coast now. And then you have two teams that are struggling a lot right now to, you know, in very different areas of trying to be able to put together competent play in order to win games, as Michigan State can't stop turning the ball over and Maryland can't block anybody to save their lives. So
yeah,
it's a bad combination. In Iowa, they have too good of a defense to not get to the quarterback and not force havoc and stuff like that. So I'm with you. I think that Nebraska game at the end of the year is going to be really interesting. I would not be surprised if Wisconsin has a very close game and they somehow come up with that one, but I don't think Wisconsin has a good enough run defense to stop Caleb Johnson. I think that's one of the big keys to it. So, yep. All right, Zach, we are going to be back in just a second. We will talk about the USC Maryland game. Before we do that, we're going to hit a commercial and then we'll come back. We'll talk about that game. Have you ever wanted to watch all 22 film, you know, that film the coaches watch? Well, now you can. Introducing the Coaches Film Room. Over at Minutes to Sports, former college coach Zach Smith breaks down film of the most relevant teams in college football with a bit of a Big Ten lead. It's not free, so you'll need to sign up for the Colonel tier, which is $25 a month, but I can attest to you that it is far more worth it than that. With about 4 to 8 games per week, this is worth so much more money, not to mention Zach's analysis making you a smarter football fan. Go check it out. The links are in the description. Minutes2sports.com. You won't be sorry. UCLA at Maryland. Hey, before we get into the game, please do like and subscribe. We definitely appreciate it. Go check out the podcast. All that good stuff definitely helps us out. And if you can't watch the YouTube video, listen on podcast. We do our best to give you stuff over there as well. All right, UCLA at Maryland. UCLA favored going coast to coast. Well, not exactly coast to coast, but pretty close to the coast on this one, Zach. They are favored by 7 over Maryland. That seems like a lot to me. I'm not saying that UCLA can't win by more than 7, but with the traveling and the way UCLA has kind of looked lately and the questioning of many people have of Lincoln Riley, this seems like a game that Maryland could pull, if not pulled, make it very, very close. What are your thoughts, Zach?
Well, I just want to clarify, we're talking about USC, not the crosstown rival UCLA. So
make that distinction.
Yes, make that distinction. You know how I feel about Loxley.
It's October.
I think the spread's too low, quite honestly.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, from like looking at it from the outside in, USC struggling, going out, you know, going from the west out east. Like when you look at that stuff, the spread seems too big, but
yeah.
It's
funny.
What you're saying too.
I've been talking about travel like all year, and this is the game where I'm like, travel schmavel, whatever. But I think, like with UCLA Rutgers, I think injuries are a huge deal. I think with USC and Maryland, I think Maryland just stinks. And I think the coach, like, I know people have issues with Lincoln Riley. People are comparing him to Clay Helton. I just feel like people need to understand this was never going to be a playoff team this year. And if you thought that, you were nuts.
Well, USC fans thought they were winning the Big Ten.
Yeah. And I mean, they were nuts. And now they want it. They're like, well, he's not as good as Clay Helton. No, you're actually in a good conference now. My goodness. And this Maryland is not a good team in a good conference. They're a terrible team. And they're not good at home. I mean, they just got blasted by 27 by the Mildcats. No offense to Northwestern. I shouldn't call them that.
Don't you dare disrespect David Brown like that.
And I say that because, well, again, I won't get into that. The Wildcats, they earned the name Wildcats last week. And Maryland is just awful. Like, they have some good pieces for sure, but they're poorly coached. They're not good at home. I think USC's athleticism is going to, I think they're going to run away with it. I think Miller Moss.
Hold on, Zach. You don't think Josh Gattis is a good coach? How dare you? He won assistant coach of the year. What was that? 2021.
Just mute my mic while I laugh for the next 5 minutes. Okay.
He just needs an antidote of confidence, Zach. That's all he needs.
He needs like a truck full. Actually, no, he's got too much. He needs someone to take it out of him.
I'm sorry, I got you off.
Speed in space.
There we
golly.
Go.
Okay. I'm just gonna address a couple of comments because they're saying Maryland's receivers are very good. Yes, they are.
Well,
they are good.
Two receivers are very good.
They have two receivers that are very good.
Prather and Felton are very, very good.
Yeah. And the rest of the team stinks.
Billy Edwards Jr. is okay.
He's okay. But I'm just saying, the overall product, it's bad. It's just bad. And I think USC, they're not as good as people thought they were after LSU. But they're not as bad as, like, I don't think they're as bad as people think they are either. I do think I think they'll be sluggish, but I think they'll get, I think they will have more explosive plays than Maryland will. And I think ultimately they run away with it. I've got 45-20.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Big game from you. So, Anthony Lucas is out in this game. I forgot to mention that from the top. I apologize. The defensive end for USC. I do think that impacts things a little bit. I think that this is put up or shut up time for USC's secondary. I think we heard a lot in the, you know, off season about USC's secondary. This is going to be the strength of the defense, and it's not been bad, but I mean, it's also not been good. So this duo of wide receivers from Maryland, they've put up over 60%, or not over, nearly 60% of the receiving yards on the team, Prather and Felton. So if USC secondary is going to prove it, they have got to shut these two guys down. And I mean, which is very difficult to do because they're both, and when I say shut them down, I mean like don't let them each have 100 yard plus receiving. They're obviously going to get there, so they're both very talented. But that's where it starts with USC. The other spot that it starts with USC is they have got to be able to run the ball in this one. If you can't run the ball against Maryland, you are not going to be able to run the ball. Maryland is one of the worst tackling teams in the nation, not just in the Big Ten, in the nation. They are the second of two Big Ten teams. They are one of only two Big Ten teams that have three or more players in the top 15 in missed tackle rate. Zach, do you know who the other team is? It's not that hard.
Is it UCLA?
No, Purdue.
Oh, gosh.
You got a 50-50 shot there.
I was like, you're setting me up for this. And I'm like, I'm going to get it wrong because I'm, it's Purdue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had a 50-50 shot there. I thought you might be able to get it right. But Woody Marks.
Thanks for the vote of confidence there. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Well, I'll get you some vote, antidote of confidence later.
There we go.
And Woody Marks, he is seventh in the Big Ten in yards after contact. So, I mean, if USC is going to run the ball here, they have to run the ball against Maryland. They really don't have any other chance to do it this season. On the flip side, Maryland, if their offensive line is ever going to be able to run block, they're going to have to do it against USC because USC right now is giving up 4.77 yards per carry to the other team, which is good for 73rd in the nation. Not good. And then USC, they also allowed 200 plus yards after catch against Penn State. Now, a lot of that was Tyler Warner. Warren. Get all the names wrong tonight. I apologize. But they need Ty Felton to go off in this one. Yep. So to me, this is going to be a battle between Maryland's wide receivers and USC secondary, and also both teams trying to be able to run the ball. If one of these two teams, I mean, this is the most basic key to the game, you know, you've ever heard. Who runs the ball better? But in addition to doing that, either USC secondary is going to have to step up and stop these talented receivers, or Maryland's receivers are going to have to step up and get a lot of yards after catch and really take apart the secondary. So one of those two things is going to happen, and I think whichever one does happen is going to determine who wins this game. Not really worried about USC's pass rush, especially with Anthony Lucas out. Not really worried too much about Maryland's pass rush against USC's offensive line. This is bad pass blocking versus bad pass rush on both sides. It's about running the ball, getting the ball to your receivers, and letting them work. However, I do think USC is going to win this one, and I have it much closer than you, Zach, but I think it's going to be 31-27.
Yeah, I think there is a possibility where they match scores, and I think that's how Maryland can stay in the game. Here's where I think maybe it gets off the rails, is USC's defense has not been great. But I do like Kamari Ramsey at safety. And I could see where Edwards either throws a pick or there's a fumble, a couple turnovers, and that's where it gets out of hand. Because I think if USC gets up a couple scores, I don't think it'll be like the Penn State game. I think they'll be out the house. And because Maryland, they're also an opportunistic defense, but they're also undisciplined. And I think I just think if you get up a couple scores, I think things compound against the Terps. But I think they can absolutely match scores and it becomes closer.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is two teams that they really need to prove something right now. And if USC runs away with it, we're going to give them a lot more credit. But I think both teams are struggling right now and they got to figure something out. And it doesn't help that the team that is probably more talented is the one that's traveling across the country. So
I'm sorry. John has said a couple things that I think were great. One was, would Maryland beat Kent State? You know, the weekly Kent State reference.
I believe so. Even in October, I believe so.
Yeah, I think so too. I do, but to your other point, I think very little of Maryland's coaching. It's because where is their coaching? Like they do this every year. And I think you've probably heard me say this, JR. At some point you are who you are.
Yeah.
Like Mike Locksley has been a great recruiter or an above average recruiter and a below average game manager. And that's been true ever since he got there. And he has never achieved the heights that the hype has laid out for him. And
it's interesting because he did, ever since COVID, he did improve his record every year. So, you know, like that was always the thing that people would point out to me when I would be critical of Mike Locksley. They would say, but he's improving, he's getting better. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, if you look at the record, I guess so, but he's still dropping games late in the year that he has no business dropping. Like, he plays good games against Ohio State and Michigan, but like, he's still dropping games like this past Northwestern game. Like, if I want to see improvement out of Maryland, I'm not looking at the record as much as I'm looking at, are you competitive against the teams that you're supposed to beat? And are you blowing out the teams that you're supposed to beat? Like, if Maryland were to play Purdue tomorrow, am I confident that Maryland would blow Purdue out? No. Am I confident that Maryland would win? No, I should be, but I wouldn't be.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we mentioned this on the Sunday show. He's 1-4 against Northwestern, and Northwestern has not been good during his tenure.
Yeah.
And he's 1-4.
They were good. Was it the COVID year they were good?
Or COVID was it year after
the COVID year?
COVID year and last year were the two years that Maryland has been, or
they weren't supposed to be good at all last year. That was the David Braun special.
Yeah. Like, well, and that was after they took Ohio State to the fourth quarter. Like, so you're expecting them to win and to get to 10 wins last year. And instead they lose to Northwestern. And like, that's a lot of respect to David Braun, but that's like, I mean, even to this point, like, if you look at their schedule and you told me that they would have UConn, Michigan State, Virginia, Villanova, Indiana, and Northwestern, and you told me they'd go 3-3, I would have told you you're crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that, aside from Indiana, there is no surefire bowl team on that first six games.
Yeah.
And they're 3-3, and they got beat by 27 last week.
Yeah. Which was just a complete falling apart in the fourth quarter, which to me, when you completely fall apart in the fourth quarter, that's on coaching a lot. Penalties, that kind of stuff. It's coaching. Philip, you're exactly right. He says Northwestern's been an every other year team. I always remember thinking like, oh, if they were 1-11 last year, they're going to be 11-1 this year or something like that.
Yeah.
Something crazy is going to happen like that. They were the team that, did they never win a game in America, or did they only win one game in America?
No, they won all their games on foreign soil, and it was one. It was in Ireland against Nebraska.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I love how crazy the Big Ten is. All right, Zach, let's talk about the spoiler makers. Oregon is heading to Rosse this Friday night. Oregon in this one. Oh, I forget how much they're favored by. They are favored by 27.5. Oregon coming off their huge win over Ohio State. Dan Lanning, we'll see if he breaks out any loopholes in the rules for this game. But, I mean, Purdue looked much better in the second half last game. Ryan Brown really seems to give them a spark, and the defense did force a turnover that was very consequential against Illinois. However, this is still a Purdue team. Their defense did not look any better, in my estimation. The offense looked better, but this is still a very much struggling defense in this one. I feel like if Purdue's going to win this game, this is going to be more of Oregon beating themselves than Purdue beating them. I don't think I'm shocking anybody by saying that, but it's very, very unlikely. Even with Purdue playing spoiler makers at time, it's very, very unlikely that Purdue would even stand a chance in this one. What's your thoughts, Zach?
Do I do it?
Do I go for it?
No, I'm not doing it. Purdue is Purdue. I hate to say it, but they are.
No big drum is saving you this week, Purdue. Sorry about you.
No, it's I do think Oregon will be a little sluggish because of the travel and the emotions from last week. But I think the sluggishness wears off in the second quarter. And I think it's kind of quick work. Like, I don't think Oregon will run it up. I don't think Purdue's going to be able to move the ball much against that defense. I mean, I don't think there's much analysis other than I think Oregon is up big in the second quarter, maybe like 28-3. And then they kind of coast the rest of the way. I've got 38-10.
Oops, sorry, I muted myself. Yeah, 38-10, that sounds about right. What did I have in this one? I had 45-17 in this one. I just, like, if Purdue's going to win this game, it's going to have to be Oregon failing on third down, just drop passes, something like that, doing this to themselves. And then Oregon, I mean, they have struggled in the red zone this year. They're 61.5%, which is 73rd in the country. 16 of their 26 attempts in the red zone have been touchdowns. So, I mean, and we saw it against Ohio State. They didn't score a touchdown, and they had a wide-open receiver on the right side of the field when that happens. So, I mean, it's possible they get down into the red zone and struggle down there. But, like, one of my keys for the game is for Purdue to stop the big play. Purdue hasn't stopped the big play against anybody this season. So, like, unless they just decide to start playing cover five, and even then, I don't even know if they're stopping the big play. So, I look at this game and I'm like, yes, Purdue has done it in the past. I don't have the exact record. Philip is asking, doesn't Purdue have an obnoxious record against top five teams when they're unranked at home? I've been trying to look it up. Last time they played a top five team at home was Ohio State. They got blown out 41-7. In 2022, they played Michigan at home and they lost 43-22. So I think that record has been mostly from back in the day. They did beat Iowa, but it was at Iowa when Iowa was number two in the country. And they did beat Michigan State
that year too.
Yeah, that's right. So 2021, they beat Michigan State.
There's some context that really matters with that. And it's, they've beaten top five teams, but there often has been a pretty big flaw in the team. So like even going back to Iowa and Michigan State back in 2021, like Michigan State was like their secondary was trash that year. And
they threw all over them.
Yeah.
Cause that's what Jeff Brom was good at. Right. I mean,
yeah. And Iowa and like Iowa was similar. Like they were adequate on offense, but they weren't good enough. And Purdue got on them. Right. And that
those
made
were
it
the
hard.
Years when you had David Bell and Aiden O'Connell, like,
yeah,
these are two NFL players. Like,
And even 2018 Ohio State, I mean, I wasn't doing a podcast then, but I remember thinking Ohio State's probably going to lose that game. And the reason why is I'm like, their defense is not very good. And their running game was also not very good in that year. And like, it was all about Dwayne Haskins and his arm. And so there were flaws that Purdue exploited in those games. I'm not sure Oregon has many flaws like those teams. Like, I think they are legit good. I think the blips in the first couple of weeks of the radar are just that, they were blips. They've reformed, they've gotten healthy, and I just don't think it's going to be much of an issue for them.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing with that record and what people talk about, like, this is when Jeff Brom was there.
Yeah.
Jeff Brom had an offense that if you had a defense that struggled, they could go up against anybody. Now, he also had an offense that could lay an egg and not play very well at times. Like when they went to Illinois in 2018, they only scored 7 points, but then the next week I guess they scored 46. When they went against, who was it? Oh, Minnesota. They only scored 10 points. A few weeks earlier, they scored 49 against Ohio State. So like, this was one of those offenses that it was kind of boom or bust all game. And when you got the boom and you went against Ohio State and Ohio State made mistakes on the offensive side of the ball, you were able to win the game. But this is a Ryan Walters team. This isn't a Jeff Brom team. So as much as I love the storyline of Spoilermakers, I mean, I titled the show Spoilermakers earlier in the year. As much as I love that, I don't think the Spoilermakers are alive under Ryan Walters. Nope. It's the Mac Makers. I'm sorry. Ouch. But that's just the way it is. Like, yeah. Unless Ryan Walters does something completely different, that's what this program is right now. And no backup quarterback who is accounting for 400 yards or more against Illinois is going to save you from that, because that was a nice game, but I don't think it's sustainable.
Yeah. Kent State might beat Purdue.
Plead the fifth.
I'm somewhat joking for John's benefit, but I'm also maybe not entirely joking. Yeah,
John and Brenton are loving this segment right now. They're like, yes. Keep talking down.
Yeah.
Philip, or what? Oh, John, I heard that. Philip said, I think Purdue hangs around a lot longer than anyone expects. Oregon wins, but Purdue covers. If Oregon makes mistakes, I agree. But I don't think it'll be Purdue's doing. Like, I think it'll be Oregon's messing up in the red zone. You know, if Dylan Gabriel throws two interceptions in the red zone again or something like that. Like, yeah. And, like, just to be honest, like, I really like Dan Lanning. So I'm not trying to say anything against Dan Lanning here, but very energetic, very emotional coaches like him. I mean, I think back to Urban Meyer. Like, they are the kind of coaches who can just struggle at any point in time against the wrong team. So as much as I was talking about this isn't a Jeff Brohm team, this is an Oregon, Dan Lanning team that it could happen. Not predicting it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen, but you see a trend with some of these emotionally driven coaches with how hard they go back. That it could happen. So Sean is asking if Hudson Card will be back. I don't think so. I haven't heard anything that he's coming back. I don't know. I don't even know if you want him back after the way Ryan Brown played.
Yeah. I don't know if you, is this a Wally Pipp situation where it's like, even if he's healthy, you ride the hot hand.
Yeah, pretty much. And hasn't Hudson Card, how many games has he played this season? Has it been five?
Five. Yeah. He hasn't been great.
Okay, yeah, he's played five. So it wouldn't be a situation where they have him out for a concussion just for a new red shirt or something like that. Yeah, I don't know if Brown is better than Card overall. I tend to think not, but Brown definitely had the better game. And Ryan Walters play calling, the defensive-minded coach taking the play sheet and saying, give it here. We're going to run this quarterback as much as possible.
Yeah,
it's like, all right, coach, go for it.
Yeah. I think there is a possibility that if he does that against Oregon, Brown might not finish the game.
Yeah, that's always the downside of it. So
yeah.
Yeah. All right, Zach. We will come back and talk about Wisconsin Northwestern. Then we have Nebraska, Indiana on the docket. And then after that, we have Michigan, Illinois, one of the top games of the week. I know there's a lot of debate there between Nebraska, Indiana, Michigan, Illinois. So we're going to go back to back there at the end. We will come back and talk about Wisconsin Northwestern here in just a second. Stay with us. The Big Ten Huddle is brought to you by The College Huddle, the largest fan-led college sports podcast community on the internet. With contributors from 70 different schools, you will get in all kinds of analysis from all over the country. Go visit thecollegehuddle.com to find your team and read articles from all across so many fans and contributors. The College Huddle is fan-made, fan-driven, and fan-fueled. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, we do want to remind you that we also have basketball episodes. Unfortunately, we will not have a basketball episode tomorrow night or Thursday night. I am traveling, so I won't be able to do that. But with the season coming soon, we'll definitely have basketball episodes.
What were you thinking? Traveling?
I know.
Wait, I thought you just stayed in your office all the time.
No. I do have parents that would like to see their grandkids, and when Ohio State is on a bye week and I don't have to do post game directly after Ohio State, that's a good time to go see the grandparents for him. So.
Grandkids?
Yeah.
You don't know. That's great. I'm glad.
If only they could drive themselves. So we're working on it. The one-year-old, he can't quite reach the pedals yet. So
listen, if you get him a Tesla and do the self-driving thing, it'll be great.
Can you imagine seeing a Tesla and it's a baby in the front seat?
Cybertruck. There we go.
Cybertruck.
Because who has the money for that? And B, who wants to be seen in one of those monstrosities? My gosh.
Yeah. There we go. Philip is saying bro casual episode tomorrow. We'll see. Maybe I'll get Kent to just, you know, sit with the bro casual on and just stare at the screen.
Nice.
All right. Let's talk about this Wisconsin-Northwestern game, Zach. So we've been talking a little bit about Northwestern and how things are looking better for them. And obviously things have been looking up for Wisconsin. They have the blowout win over, who was it? I'm blanking right now.
Rutgers.
Over Purdue. And then this last week, they have the blowout win over Rutgers. So, you know, it's been a good stretch for Wisconsin. And Northwestern's coming off the blowout win over Maryland. In this one, we have Wisconsin favored by 7, even though they're on the road. That's another one that just seems too high for me. I think the Northwestern's been playing pretty well at home. And, you know, Wisconsin's been throwing the ball pretty well, but over there on the coast, it is a little bit more difficult to do so. So, Zach, what are some of your thoughts on this game?
I don't know what to make of Wisconsin. Because on one hand, I'm like, they have been, ever since the bye week, they have kind of righted the ship. Tywee Walker has been a revelation. Like, he has been very good.
Better than Chez Malusi was.
Yeah. And I think 184 yards last week against Rutgers. Mm-hmm. Braden Locke is exceeding expectations, but it's hard for me to give a lot of credence to it because I don't think the Rutgers team that they beat is the Rutgers team that beat Washington. Like, by any means or by any stretch. And Purdue is Purdue. Like, no offense to the Boilermakers, but I just don't think. And before people say, well, Purdue almost beat Illinois, I'm like, I think there are some caveats there. So I just don't know what to make of Wisconsin because I still think about their games against Alabama. I still think about their game against USC. And I think with Northwestern, you kind of know that you kind of know what you're going to get, which is strong defense. You're going to get some iffy offense, but they're going to be well coached. And I think they are showing that they have a better rhythm than they've had as Zach Lujan has gotten more adjusted. I think Jack Lausch has made some pretty big strides. Kurtz has gotten involved in the receiving game. So I feel like Northwestern actually might be the more consistent team in my mind, but I'm like, if Wisconsin continues to gel and they continue to ascend, I think Wisconsin's the better team. But I also think Northwestern in their little field by the lake, like there's a uniqueness to it that I think really does favor the home team. So I agree with you. I feel like the line's too big on this one.
Yeah. I think the line is too big in this one. I would be surprised if either team wins this one by a touchdown or more. If I had to go with a team that would win by a touchdown or more, I'd honestly go with Northwestern. I like Wisconsin. I liked Wisconsin going into the year, but, you know, this is still an offensive line that has been very good at pass blocking, but you have a Northwestern team that is pretty good at run defense, and their defensive line isn't anything to, you know, to sniff at either. So I think that Northwestern, if they stop the run in this one, which again, I know that's like the most cliche key to the game ever, but I think it rings true in this one because that's what Wisconsin is going to need in order to protect Braden Locke, which has been the key for him to have good games lately. Yeah. He has to be protected. But if they're not able to protect him, then he's going to struggle, especially with where the game is at, you know, on the coast of Lake Michigan. up there, as Britton pointed out. But I feel like this is a game where if Northwestern does what Northwestern is supposed to do in stopping the run, I think that even though AJ Henning and Bryce Kurtz are very good players on the outside, and I think that they could be the key to Northwestern winning this game, I think Wisconsin has to utilize their freshman and Xavier Lucas in order to stop them. Now, he's only one man, so he's not going to be able to stop, you know, both of them. But if their secondary is able to do that, and I remember we were talking about this as possibly one of the best secondaries in the Big Ten at the beginning of the season. You know, with Hunter Waller, Ricardo Hallman, you have Xavier Lucas now stepping up. You're talking about this as very, very good secondary. And not that I don't think they are. I don't think they've shown that the entire season. They showed it last game, and they showed it against Purdue, but like you pointed out, those are not great teams in the Big Ten right now. So for me, this is the prove it game for Wisconsin. You're right. Northwestern has been more consistent. We know what Northwestern is, you know, athletic quarterback who can be a playmaker, good, solid, strong defense, playmakers on the outside and AJ Henney and Bryce Kurtz. But can Wisconsin keep the magic going? Can Luke Fickell and Phil Longo have a good enough running game for Braden Locke to be able to throw the ball? I'm not sure how it'll play out. I have my prediction. Did you give yours yet, Zach?
Not yet. Not yet.
Okay, go ahead and give yours, and then I'll give mine.
So I need to repent for calling the Northwestern Cats the Mild Cats, because I think they will be wild in this game. Oh. I think the rotation of the defensive line is something that doesn't get talked about enough. It's something that the Westlot Pirates guys, if you check out that podcast, they're awesome, by the way, with Northwestern. But they love Anto Saka. And like,
he's got one of the best win rates in the Big Ten. He's probably the most underrated pass rusher in the Big Ten, if you ask me.
And they rotate him in. Like, he's one of several guys that they rotate in. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not getting talked about enough. They're fresh. They're fresh all game. I don't think Braden Locke's going to be comfortable in this game. I think it's low scoring. And I think Northwestern pulls off the upset. I've got 17-13 Northwestern. Oh, you are muted.
Yeah, I got it. Thank you. Yeah, I actually am going to be pretty close with you on this one. I think it'll be a little bit more scoring, but I'm actually going to go with Northwestern in this one, 24-17. Honestly, it was kind of hard to pick either one. I could see either team winning this one 24-17. It just kind of depends on how the running game goes for Wisconsin. But I like the receivers that Northwestern has on the outside better than Wisconsin. I like them better than Wisconsin's secondary is looking right now. I like Jack Lausch and his playmaking ability. I think Northwestern should be able to run the ball on this Wisconsin team. And, you know, if Wisconsin comes out and they do not seem to be the world beaters that they seem to be the past few weeks, then this is definitely an opportunity that Northwestern has to kind of show that, hey, the Cinderella magic that David Braun last year, that wasn't it. This really is a good football program with a good football team who can make some things happen and who can take down teams in the Big Ten. So I'm going to go with Northwestern in this one, 24-17. And I think the home field advantage is definitely going to help.
Yep. Agreed.
All right. We're going to do one more commercial. Then we'll come back. We'll talk about Indiana versus Nebraska. And then we will go right into Michigan, Illinois after that one. One more commercial. Stay with us. Home Field is your go-to destination for premium collegiate apparel with a passion for comfort and a flair for vintage design. Home Field brings you gear that is comfortable and stylish. With over 150 colleges to choose from, Home Field digs deep into the archives, uncovering forgotten logos, iconic mascots, and legendary moments to create one-of-a-kind apparel. Use my code TBTH for 15% off for new customers, or use my link in the description. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, Zach. I got some stats for this game. Ooh, Nebraska.
Go for it.
Headed to Bloomington, Indiana. Who would have thought? Bloomington, Indiana, the mecca of Big Ten football. That's not true. But it's a very, very good team this year, all right? This is an undefeated Big Ten team. More wins than Ohio State this season so far. Yeah, ouch. How about that? That's a pretty good stat for them, huh? So I'm very excited about this Indiana team. I think Indiana is going to do a good job in this game. I think that Nebraska definitely has some areas that makes me a little bit concerned. I really like the matchup. But at the end of the day, this is an Indiana team that's favored by 6.5. And it's, you know, if you would ask anybody 20 years ago, is Indiana ever going to be favored 6.5 over Nebraska? People would say, no way. But here we are in 2024. Indiana at home is favored over Nebraska by 6.5. Zach, what are your thoughts on this game?
That's a good question. John Jacobs just said, even with the Roark injury, do we know what
I'm
the
pretty
Roark...
sure he's playing. I don't know if he has anything serious. I heard there was maybe something, but
I was gonna say I had a whole thought about this, and then John Jacobs. Oh, he was kidding.
Did we miss something?
Because like, if he's hurt.
I heard he got banged up a little bit in the Northwestern game. He took some kind of hit or something, but like I said, I didn't think it was serious. So yeah, John got us on that one. Kudos to you, John.
Well done. I am very curious how the receivers for Indiana match up against the secondary of Nebraska, as well as their offensive line against Nebraska's defensive line. I think that that might be for me the key to the matchup, because I think if Indiana makes it a shootout, I think they can win, and I think they win fairly comfortably. But I say that, like, I think Rayola is playing really well, but again, I don't think it's good for them to put so much on his shoulders. And I think Indiana's a bit more balanced offensively. So that's my initial thoughts. I'm curious to hear your thoughts, JR. As you think about this game, where would you say you are? What matchups are you most interested in?
Yeah, I think this is going to be the closest game of the weekend, and I think it's going to be a really, really fun game to watch, because I think Nebraska, the entire game, I think they're going to be relying on that defense, and they're going to be trying to dictate tempo in this game. I think they're going to be trying to run the ball, and they're going to be trying to hold on to it as long as they can so they can keep that defense fresh going up against Curtis Work in this passing attack, and also Ellison, who is a very good running back in his own right. So I am a little concerned about Dylan Raiola. These are kind of deep cut stats, and I know sometimes people don't like deep cut stats, but just hear me out for a second, okay? He has the third most turnover worthy throws in the Big Ten when he's blitzed. So that means that when he is blitzed, he is the third most likely, he has the third most throws that could be a turnover, or would be more likely to be a turnover rather than be caught. He has the third worst PFF grade when blitzed. Now, I don't know if Indiana is going to be sending the blitz against them, but even if they don't send the blitz, I think the defensive line is a very good pass rushing defensive line. So this is a team that doesn't necessarily need to get home all the time with the blitz, but they can do so with the defensive line as well. Dylan Raiola has not gone up against, you know, great defenses so far this season. He went up against Illinois and Rutgers. Colorado, not a good defense. Northern Illinois, not a good defense. And so if he's going to go up against this better defense, which I'm not going to say it's the best defense in the Big Ten, but this is a better defense than, you know, most others in the Big Ten, especially the defensive line. The defensive line, I will say, is probably one of the best in the Big Ten, especially when you look at their pass rushing ability. I do have some concerns for Dylan Raiola. I think Dylan Raiola has been very impressive, so I definitely think he can, you know, mitigate those concerns, but I do have some concerns on that. What's your thoughts on Dylan Raiola, Zach?
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw the good and the bad in the Illinois game, right? Like, he made some plays, but then, down the stretch, he missed that one throw in the end zone. It wasn't a turnover-worthy play for sure, but it was... And if I remember correctly, there was just enough pressure to kind of get him off his mark. And I think that Illinois game is maybe a good primer for us, right? Like, it was the best secondary he went against. And I correct me if I'm wrong, I would argue that Illinois' secondary will probably be better than the one he faces against Indiana. But I think overall defense, I would probably pick Indiana over Illinois.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Illinois' secondary definitely better, especially when you look at the size of Illinois' secondary. Nebraska, they have large wide receivers, which really helps them. And Indiana, they don't have very big wide receivers. I was listening to Tom Fornelli talk about this on the Cover 3 podcast earlier today, and he said that Indiana only has one cornerback or one DB who is over 6 feet tall. Well, you look at Nebraska's wide receivers, these guys are all huge.
Yeah.
So I could definitely see a number of just throw it up and see what happens balls from Raiola in this one. And if that happens, I favor Nebraska's wide receivers more just purely based on the size. Now, Indiana's DBs are very talented. They've done a good job of stopping teams. I mean, they held Ty Felton pretty well in check when they played them earlier this year. However, on the flip side, Curtis Work also did throw his two interceptions of the year against Maryland earlier this year. And some more deep cut stats for you here. So if you don't like them, I apologize. But Curtis Work, Nebraska is going to have to protect the middle of the field against them, because Curtis Work, I will tell you, he loves to throw the ball over the middle of the field, which is very impressive because it's the most dangerous place to throw the ball, but he is very impressive doing so. he has a 75 plus completion percentage over the middle of the field, which is just unheard of. That is insane. Throwing the ball over the middle of the field, 75% plus, that is just insane that you're doing that. That speaks to not only him, but his wide receivers as well. Indiana, by the way, one of the best wide receiver corps in the Big Ten, possibly in the nation. I mean, this is wide receiver corps, just fantastic for Indiana. Over 50% of Curtis Work's passes have been over the line of scrimmage, over the middle. Over 50% of them. You're talking over the middle of the field, 10 yards, 20 yards, you know, over the line of scrimmage. It's just insane that somebody would throw the ball over the middle of the field that often and complete that many balls. However, the two interceptions that he threw against Maryland, guess where they were at, Zach?
Middle of the field.
Over the middle of the field. So even if the play isn't there, Curtis Rourke is still going to believe in his arm enough, or that his arm is enough to do that, and that's where Nebraska is going to have to try to protect the middle of the field as much as possible. And if Curtis Rourke puts the ball in danger, they are going to have to capitalize. I mean, this can't be a situation where you have dropped interceptions and stuff like that. If a ball hits a Nebraska defender in the hands and he drops it, game over. Indiana's going to win this game. If they can't pick him off, if Curtis Rourke gives him the opportunity, I don't even know if Curtis Rourke's going to give him the opportunity to. He might not, but if the opportunity presents itself, they're going to have to capitalize on it.
Yeah, well, and I think it's not just capitalizing by getting the turnover, but then it's capitalizing by scoring. And I think that's where my concern with Nebraska is I'm convinced that Indiana, I think Nebraska's defense is really good. Like, I think it's certainly, I think, the best overall defense they will have faced up to this point.
Best run defense, for sure.
Yeah, and I would say I think overall, right, I think you can go by segments, but I think overall defense, I think it's
I think Northwestern's defense is very good, so I think there's a little bit of a discussion there, and I think that Maryland's defense is better at creating turnovers, but run defense, I think for sure Nebraska, and then overall, like you're saying, I give the lean to Nebraska, but there are other aspects of other defenses. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think the thing that I think Nebraska is probably a little too inconsistent scoring. And I'm like, if they want to win this game, they can't just make turnovers. They have to make them pay. Like, it's got to end in points. And I think that, like, I think that's why their inconsistency in offense is why Rutgers had a shot to win when they had no business having a shot to win at the end. I think it's why Illinois won is just their inconsistency on offense. I think Nebraska, if they were a year, if Raiola was a year older and some of their offensive skill was a little bit more consistent, I think that they would pull this off. But I think Indiana, with their senior laden leadership, I agree with you. I think their receivers are really underrated. I have a man crush on Elijah Surratt. Like, the dude's awesome. And I mean, he's one of many, and like, they've got a two-headed monster at running back with Lawton and Ellison. Like, I think they're really good. And I just love Curtis Rourke's poise. Like, I think even if he throws a pick in this game or even two, we saw it with Maryland, like, he's unfazed. And I just think at home, knowing that they have a chance to continue to rise in the rankings. I mean, they're 16th in the country right now. And you can get a big win over, I think, a Nebraska team that a lot of people respect. I think Indiana wins this game. I've got 31-24.
31-24. All right, so you're looking for a big win for Indiana here. I think it's going to be a little bit closer. I'm going to give credit to Nebraska's defense, and I think that they are going to be able to run the ball a little bit more. I'm not, you know, predicting like a big running game for Nebraska, but more success than other teams have seen, and for them to be able to, you know, dictate tempo a little bit more, which I think will be very impactful in this game. They're going to try their best to keep the ball out of Curtis Rourke's hands because he's just so dangerous anytime that offense has the ball. I think what this game is going to come down to, honestly, is the red zone. I think what happens in the red zone is going to be what determines this game. Indiana, their red zone scoring percentage is 92%, which is good for 29th in the country. However, their defense, every single time another team has gotten in the red zone, they've scored on them. So can Nebraska move the ball well enough down the field in order to get in the red zone? And honestly, I don't like Indiana's chances to stop them when Nebraska has those big, huge wide receivers. Like, I just, it's hard for me to imagine that they're not going to try and be able to utilize that. Now, can they get pressure on Dylan Raiola so that way he can't use those guys? Of course. I mean, that would be the great equalizer there if they can do that. But I don't know if I can see that happening all game. It will happen at some point in this game, but I don't see it happening all game long because I think Matt Rhule and his offensive staff is too smart to let that happen all game. And then on the flip side, Nebraska, they've only scored on 79% of their red zone trips, but teams are only scoring at a 69% clip, which is good for 11th in the country. So you have a lot of good and also a lot of bad going up against each other here in the red zone. I think this is where the game is going to get won. I think both teams are going to get into the red zone multiple times, and I think that both teams are going to score in the red zone. It's just going to be who can score more often. It's going to be very, very interesting in this one. However, I am picking the Hoosiers. Don't pick against the Hoosiers, especially at home. And Matt Rhule, you have to win some more ranked games before I pick you in this one. I do think it'll be close. I pick Indiana to win 24-23. I think Indiana is the better coach team. Yes, I said that. Indiana is the better coach team. But I think that Nebraska does give them a bit of a nail biter. And honestly, I think it's going to be really, really good for Indiana to get to a nail biter game that comes down to it at the end of the game. I think it's going to give them a lot of confidence. And I think we could be talking about, at the end of the season, a one-loss Indiana team at worst.
Oof.
I really like this team, man.
Indiana, Oregon in the Big Ten Championship game?
Boy, if that happens, that would be crazy.
Yeah. That'd be
and Oregon would insane. Be able to travel all that way. So
yeah, a home game for Indiana.
There we go.
Indianapolis, there you go.
Let's do it.
I will say... And I if it go like we're both predicting a one score win for Indiana, I really hope we stay away from the narrative of Matt Rhule and Nebraska can't win one score. Because I think the reality is Indiana's the better team. And like I think you can do that a little bit with Illinois, because I think there's maybe a little, like, no offense to Illinois. I think Illinois is having a great season. I think there's a little fool's gold there. But like, I think with Indiana, I think Indiana's legit.
I think they are too. I think they are too. And I think Nebraska, as long as they play a clean game, I forgot to mention that. As long as they play a clean game and they don't have all the penalties and stuff like that, like they had against Illinois, this will be a close one. But you know, we'll see. I'm so excited for this game. This is going to be an awesome game.
It's going to be a good game.
All right, let's move on to our final game here, Zach. Speaking of Illinois, we got Michigan heading to Illinois for a top 25 matchup between the Wolverines and the Fighting Illini. The Wolverines are thinking about who their quarterback is going to be. Looks like it's going to be Jack Tuttle, and they are favored by 3 points in this game on the road. Again, this is another one that seems kind of weird to me. I mean, Vegas, they obviously do their homework on this one, so I can't say they're wrong, but seems a little strange to me that at home, Michigan would be a 3-point favorite. However, this is the way it's looking right now. I do have some concerns about the quarterback situation for Michigan. If they were turning the ball over against Washington, this is an Illinois team that has done a very good job of capitalizing on turnovers so far this season. However, I think Kalel Mullins, Donovan Edwards, a very good 1-2 punch and running back. So they are going to do their best to try and run the ball in this one. It's going to be an interesting matchup between the defensive line of Illinois and the offensive line of Michigan in this one. What are your thoughts, Zach?
I think this is going to be a very helpful. It's going to be a helpful game to know where these teams really are. Like, I think there's a lot of questions about both Illinois and Michigan. And not that this game's going to answer everything, but I think it does. Like, I think with Michigan, we kind of expected that they would stay somewhere among the elites. I don't think anyone expected them to be like elite, but I think people think, oh, they have elite lines. And I think at least the first six games, they have not had elite lines. They have elite players like Mason Graham. But I think the line play, has left a lot to be desired. Obviously, quarterback play has left a lot to be desired. And I think with Illinois, I think they've maybe punched above their weight the first six games. And like, I think there's a lot of credit that goes around to Brett Bielema and to Luke Altmaier and that defense. But who are they really? Like, are they who we saw in the first half against Purdue? Or are they who we saw in the second half against Purdue? Are they the team that rallied to beat Nebraska? Or are they the team that honestly never really, like, never really had a shot to beat Penn State? And that's, I think that's the question I have for both these teams. And I think Michigan certainly has a talent advantage. But how is that going to be coached? I think that's probably the biggest question versus can Illinois come in without Caden Fagan, but can they come in, get some explosive plays with their wide receivers, particularly trying to exploit the other half of the defensive backfield? Obviously, Will Johnson's probably going to try to take Will away. Johnson.
Yeah. Throw the other way every time.
So can their receivers exploit the other side?
Yeah.
And on the flip side, can Illinois do enough to slow down Michigan's backs so that they're able to take advantage and outscore Michigan?
Yeah, it's a very interesting matchup because Illinois has struggled to stop the run this season. However, that secondary, I mean, I would not be surprised if Michigan comes out and throws the ball 8 times in this game. Like, that wouldn't surprise me at all. And honestly, that's probably what they need to do. Unfortunately, I don't trust Michigan's coaching staff enough. I look at this coaching staff of Illinois. This is one of the most underrated coaching staffs in the nation. You have Barry Lundy Jr., you have Aaron Henry, and you have Brett Bielema, who this guy has won Big Ten championships. I feel like every time we talk about Illinois, I have to come on here and make a case for Brett Bielema because I think he's such a good coach, and I don't think he gets any of the national credit for it. I was listening to a podcast earlier today and they were talking about Illinois and they were like, oh yeah, that Brett guy, like what's he gonna do? And it's like, no, he's a much better coach than what people give him credit for. I mean, like, they were basically making fun of Brett Bielema, which, you know, I get it, like, you know, podcasting and stuff like that. I mean, we were just making fun of Maryland earlier, so like, I get it, you know,
but they deserve it. They deserve it. Brett Bielema doesn't deserve this.
Right, that's what I'm saying, is like, Brett Bielema has been a which I love that people call him Bert. I don't know. It gets me every time. So I always have to be very, you know, focused on saying the right name every time. But I think that this is too good of an Illinois team to lose at home in a big game that they know they can win. Brett Bielema is going to have these guys ready, and he's going to make sure they know, hey, this Michigan team is down. Yes, they have one of the best defensive lines in the nation, not only at rushing the passer, but also they're very good at stopping the run. And Illinois does struggle in pass protection. If this game is won by Michigan, it's going to look like the way it looked Michigan versus USC in the beginning of the game, all game long. I just don't know if they can do that all game. I mean, it is really something to ask for 4 defensive linemen to play like that all game long. I see some people giving backup defensive linemen from Michigan credit, like the one guy, I literally mean guy, his last name is Guy, and Benny, the defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. I still think those guys are that good. I think every time those guys are in the game, you have an opportunity to run on them. And I think that Barry Lundy Jr. is a smart enough offensive coordinator to recognize that, to see, oh, they're subbing out Kenneth Grant and Mason Graham right now. Let's go in there and let's run at them. Like you said, you won't have Caden Fagan, so that is, you know, something against Illinois here. But similar to what I was talking about earlier with, like, the coaching matchup, this is one of those games where it's like, yeah, I think that Michigan has more weapons and they have some better players and they probably are more talented, but I give it to the better coach team.
So I hear you. Here's my concern.
Okay.
Illinois' rushing average per carry is 3.9.
That's what they allow, or
that's what they rush for.
Okay.
It's 3.9 yards. And they're at least their starting back, Caden Fagan, he's out. Josh McCray is their next back. 41 carries, 181, 4.4 yards. Luke Altmaier he's got a little bit of mobility, but they don't count on him that for much. He's averaging 1.8 yards per carry.
I would say he's not a statue. I wouldn't say he's a scrambler, but I would say he's not a statue.
Yeah, he's not
no
a statue.
No Max Brosmer.
Yeah.
Which Max Brosmer did have a really nice scramble last game, so maybe I shouldn't say that. But
he's no Kaliak Manis. I think that might be the better statue.
There we go.
Yeah. He tries to play the statue game from Bluey. If you've ever seen that episode,
I've seen plenty of Bluey. Don't you worry.
Yeah. I got a statue to sell you. That was British, not Australian. I'm sorry. I'm just going to keep moving on.
I want you to do the rest of this preview in an Australian accent.
Listen, mate, that's all I got. That's all I got. That's all I got, mate. That's my concern. Cause I think I agree with you that we've said it so many times that Michigan's defense, I think they get tired. And so in the second half of games, they really struggle. I think Josh McCray is actually underrated, but I just don't know if their offense, their run blocking and their running game is good enough to exploit that. I don't know. What do you think?
I think this comes down to second half versus first half. You know, I know Michigan was better in the second half against Washington. So, you know, I know people are going to point to that, but I still think that Wink Martindale doesn't do a great job of adjusting things in the second half. And I still think you have a defensive line that is so much more, you know, just tired at the end of the game. So if Illinois can keep this close at halftime. You know, that was one of the things that hurt USC and Minnesota so much is that Michigan was just up by so much.
Yeah.
And then the fourth quarter, they tried to make a comeback. In USC, they tried to make a comeback the entire second half, but Michigan was up by just so much that it was hard to do that. So for me, if Illinois can just keep it within a touchdown or two into the second half, which I don't know, they could be leading. Like, I'm not trying to say that Illinois is not, you know, going to be in this game. But, I mean, they could be leading in this one, too, in the second half. But if they can just keep it close or be leading themselves at the end of the first half, I think this is Illinois' game because Illinois is going to be fresher. They're going to be better. And Philip pointed out earlier, Illinois, better quarterback, better coaching. Like, I mean, Jack Tuttle looked better against Washington, and he does have some mobility to him. Actually, I think he might be more mobile than Alex Orji at times, especially in scrambling. But This is still a team that in Michigan that they have liabilities in that secondary. If Zeke Berry can't cover anybody again, if Jair Hill, I think it's Jair. I'm sorry if I get his name wrong. If he can't cover anybody again, like, and if they just don't pass to Will Johnson, like, you got two great wide receivers. You have Pat Bryant, Zachary Franklin. So whichever one Will Johnson is on, just pass it to the other one.
And I
think McCray is a pretty good pass catching back as well. He's not anything fantastic, but I think he can get the job done. So you put a linebacker on him, he's enough.
Yeah.
So I'll go with my score prediction first. How about that?
Since I made you go first.
My score prediction in this one, I think the tendency is to think, oh, Michigan's going to get close and they're going to get field goals. I don't think so. I think Michigan is going to turn the ball over too much. I think Illinois is going to have at least two interceptions in this game. And I think they come out on top 21-14. Illinois wins.
Illinois fans can rejoice because I'm picking against them. And whenever I pick against Illinois wins. So this actually could be the best thing for Illinois.
You're actually doing them a favor. Don't get mad at Illinois fans. He's doing you a favor right now.
This is a deceptive way of saying I love you, Illinois, and I hate Michigan. I just can't I hear what you're saying about the tiredness and taking Kenneth Grant out. I think I'm just looking at their power four games and their lack of ability to run the ball and their inability to stop the run. So like even Kansas, and I know they beat Kansas, they allowed 5.6 yards per carry against Kansas. I'm not sure they beat Kansas without the turnovers. And like Kansas is not good. Like they're not very good this year. And they could not run the ball. It's 2.3 yards per carry against Kansas. And it's similar against their games against Penn State. I think Nebraska as well. I didn't look up Nebraska, but Penn State I looked up. And that was pretty lopsided as well. And I just think with Jack Tuttle handing the ball off, I do think that run game, especially with Donovan Edwards, starts to open up. I think you'll see some thunder and lightning in this game. I think Illinois will have enough big plays to keep this close. Like I think it's a close game. I think it'll be sloppy, especially like I think Tuttle will turn it over. Like I don't think they're going to play a clean game, but I do think they'll be able to control the line of scrimmage from the offensive side of the ball enough to get to the fourth quarter. And I think they're able to put it away late. I've got 27-24.
Oh, that's a close one. Close one. And you're picking Michigan?
Yeah, I'm picking Michigan, which means Illinois is going to win. So
there we go. It's already guaranteed. Don't even have to worry about it. Yeah. You'll bet it. I'm just kidding. Don't bet on us. We're not that good at picking games. Okay. Don't. Yeah. There are much better people out there at that. I think this is going to be a really fun game to watch. If it is kind of back and forth all game, I think this is going to be really, really interesting to see how that happens. But if it's not, I think Illinois has a good chance to come back. So at 27-24, that's like two Michigan game scores already this season, right?
I know.
That was USC and Minnesota.
I really wasn't trying to pick. I didn't even think about that. So I'm not just trying to pick a score that I just think I feel like it's going to be in the 20s. I feel like that's what Illinois often does. And I feel like that's often what Michigan does. And I think like both teams can exploit each other, I think, in this game.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's 24-27 Illinois wins. Yeah. So
yeah,
watch that happen.
I think Illinois can easily, like, I think what you said can easily come true. I wouldn't be surprised if it came true. I just think the running game is going to be too much of a factor.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think you're right. So it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And even though I think Michigan's running game will have a good day, I think Illinois, they're just too good at the turnovers. So Brenton says, Tittle Tuttle would be a great podcast name. You know what, Brenton? I'm going to let you start that one. We're not going to. I'm going to let you start that one, man. That sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, Zach. That's all we got. That's all the games we got to preview. Anything else going on in the Big Ten you want to bring up?
Oh, man. I'm still just bummed about Simmons being out for Ohio State. I think it's. Oh man, he was having such a good year, but it's fun.
I hate when that happens. It's not just because he's an Ohio State player. I hate when that happens for anybody who's really raising their draft stock and having a great year. I mean, man, I was so upset when that happened to Corum late in the year.
Yeah.
2 years ago, man, I hated that for him. He was having such a good year. Could have possibly won the Heisman, that season, which I know that's like weird to say as an Ohio State fan, but I don't want to see anybody get injured. Like,
yeah.
Rather beat the team because they're good, not beat them because they have somebody injured.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's interesting. Ohio State has this awful track record under Ryan Day for playing teams with injured players and still losing.
Yes, that does seem to be an issue.
Like Jordan Birch, Kayvon Thibodeau, Blake Corum. Like it's like, oh, the star player is out. Oh, like maybe they'll actually win by more. No, they lose. It's like, what are you... Take advantage of the injuries, man. Like, what the heck are you doing? Sorry, not to go on an Ohio State mini rant, but... Yeah.
Well, Michigan, they might have a good day because that Babaloa, as New Life here points out, 5-star offensive tackle expected to commit to Michigan. Yeah, that Babaloa is expected to go to Michigan. So, you want to know a secret, Zach? Ohio State didn't even offer him. Thanks, Justin Fry.
Probably because he thought he was fake, like Rocky Balboa instead of Babaloa.
He read the name. He's like, Balboa.
That's not real. It's like, come on, Justin. Do your research. Do your homework, man.
Oh, man. I think about it sometimes. I think about how Ohio State fans were wondering if Indiana would hire Justin Fry when Tom Allen was fired. It was very early on. There wasn't all that much going on, but they wondered that. They were like, are they going to hire Justin Fry? I think it's safe to say they made the right decision going with Kurt Cignetti.
Can Kurt Cignetti make Justin Fry an analyst?
No, I think he's seen the offensive line. He doesn't want that anywhere near his team.
Sorry.
Oh boy. All right, everybody. Thanks for coming and listening to the podcast tonight. We really appreciate it. Even if you listen afterward on the podcast or listening afterward on YouTube, we really appreciate all of you. Zach, you want to tell people where they can find Big Ten Football Talk?
Yeah, Thursday morning, we're dropping the midseason review of the Big Ten. And that'll be Thursday morning at dropping at 7, but obviously you can find it anywhere you get podcasts, Apple, Spotify, YouTube. Like and subscribe and follow. Appreciate you guys. And of course, you can always find me here Sunday nights, Tuesday nights, and then Monday nights on the call-in show for Voice of College Football, Ohio State. So
yeah, we had a good call-in show last night. That was fun.
It was very fun.
A lot of angry Ohio State fans. So if you ever just want to, you know, listen to some Ohio State fans get angry, come listen after a loss. Losses don't happen very much. I mean, but when they do, oh boy, it's a party.
We also got a makeshift wrestling promo last night that we did not know what to do with.
Yeah. Yeah, that was interesting. I think we handled it appropriately.
Oh yeah. 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 That's the bottom line. Cause Stone Cold said so. All right.
Yeah. See ya.
There we go.
All right, everybody. Thanks for coming and listening. We appreciate it. Thank you to Zach for coming on, previewing all the games with me. Have a good night.